Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been the leader in waterfowl conservation, with over 16 million acres of habitat conserved. DU supporters and volunteers have led the charge to fill the skies with waterfowl, today, tomorrow, and forever. You too can play a role in leaving a legacy for the future of waterfowl hunting. To find an event near you or to join our volunteer team, go to www.ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
Welcome to the Standard Sportsman Podcast. The show features trending topics, touching all aspects of duck and goose hunting in an effort to motivate others to leave the resource better than they found it. Hosts Cason Short and Brent Birch are lifelong Arkansas hunter conservationists, delivering thought-provoking discussions with engaging guests before, during, and after duck season. Thanks for spending time with us today. Now let's jump into today's show with the guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Standard Sportsman Podcast. I'm Cason Short, joined as always with Brent Birch. And we've got a pretty cool guest lined up for us today. We've got Eric Reinhart on here. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey man, thanks. Glad I'm here. Glad you guys took time out of your day to deal with me.
Yeah, we just recorded a podcast right before this, going through our Game and Fish survey, Arkansas Game and Fish Commission survey that just came out last Friday, that's got all kinds of things on it that people like to get worked up about, potential season dates and mud motors and non-resident, resident, all that. So we're full on duck today.
Well, unfortunately, yeah. Unfortunately, where we're at, we got to have those talks. And it's terrible that it's come to that the government has to send out a survey, but here we are nonetheless. So it's we're there. Needs to happen.
The Standard Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors. Waterfowl hunters deserve to have a set of waders that can excel year in and year out throughout the duration of the season. So Sitka Gear set out to build the best pair of waders ever. Constructed from Gore-Tex Pro Laminate, the face fabric offers added durability and is breathable in active working conditions while completely sealing out the elements. Importantly, they proudly stand behind all of their Delta Zip wader features with their 100% serviceable guarantee. And I'm speaking from experience, as I have sent my original pair of Sitka waders from the 2018 season back twice without a hiccup. Engineered to outwork, outlast, and outhunt everything else in the market, the Delta Zip Wader from Sitka Gear is the gold standard for reliability. The Chatham Jacket from Tom Beckby features a durable, weatherproof 8-ounce wax shelter cloth shell that develops a great-looking patina with use. I've actually worn this jacket the last couple of seasons and appreciate the shorter cut to it, so it fits great inside my waders. It's also a really good weight for most Arkansas days of field. So if you'd like to mix a little vintage look with your technical gear waders, this is the jacket. You can find the jacket online at tombeckby.com. You can also find it in their brick and mortar locations in Wilson, Arkansas, Birmingham, Alabama, and the new store in Oxford, Mississippi. For people that don't know, I mean, there's going to be a pretty decent contingency of our listeners probably that know, you know the name, and we'll know, you know, Daybreak Outdoors and North Delta Outfitters. But why don't you give a little quick, you know, background about you and shed some light on who Eric Reinhart is.
So guys, I'm on Daybreak Outdoors. Brandon Martin, one of my best friends, and pretty much we're family, kind of like my little brother. He's been around a long time and just kind of that kid that showed up, before he got to college through a guy we knew, and he's just before he got to college, I should say, and he's just been helping and kind of pretty proud of him. He's taken that thing and ran with it, and he's a worker. So when you work, good things tend to happen. And anyways, you know, that was mostly filmed on the farm when I was farming a bunch, and since then we've kind of taken off with this North Delta thing, and it's going really well. We're lucky. I was blessed with this opportunity to get a chance to do it, and it's been fun. It's a lot of work, but pretty much it's just a 5-star outfitting service. We house you, we feed you, we let you drink, we take you hunting, we feed you some more, and then lots of fellowship. And what we try to do is just eliminate just take care of the controllables and let your personalities and your people and do the rest. Everybody has a really good job. It does a really good job around here and of doing their part. And man, that makes it fun or a lot easier. You during the season, you question that, like, oh man, I'm really aggravated at that or at this or at, you know, you think about it. But at the end of the day, you look back. I'm sitting here now at the lodge, and we are pretty lucky. I've got a heck of, I mean, our crew is fabulous. Just everybody, the kitchen, the guys running the kitchen, all the guys are great, and I'm proud to have every one of them. So that's kind of where it's went. I used to farm a whole lot, so I've got a heavy background in ag, and I've always been blessed to have a lot of spots to hunt. And kind of, I've got to watch, you know, Southeast Missouri's in the North Delta. A lot of people forget about it, but we're right here, like the Otter Slough, Mingo National Wildlife Refuge, 10 Mile Pond. You know, it's where the Little River Drainage District's drained all the water into Big Lake. So you can imagine what's upstream from Big Lake. And now it's all, you know, rice fields and, you know, cotton on the high ridges, probably where the white oaks were, or cherry bark or whatever. And you know, that's kind of how the whole Boot Hill is. It's either really, really good dirt or gumbo, and it's pretty flat and there's not any trees left anywhere. Not like Arkansas. It's Delta. Like it's all gone. So that's what happened. They drained the swamp, took the trees, and here we are farming it, but the ducks still and geese still kind of, they're still around. They're more concentrated than they used to be, but, hey, that's me. I'm just a north, you know, literally from the North Delta. I can see the Ozarks when I'm hunting most of the time, or used to be at home. So we're the first ag, you know, when you fall out of the hills. So I kind of get to the beginning of it. So I'm kind of lucky, but that's a pretty simple introduction, but we got more important things to talk about than me. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a cool spot. I've watched, I don't know how many countless Daybreak Outdoors, and I appreciate the way y'all leverage your channel or that channel to show more than just the kill kind of aspect of it. You do a bunch of stuff in the off season.
I wish we could do more in the off season. It's just everybody's getting babies, and honestly, it's just I shouldn't be this way, and I'm probably gonna grow out of it. But man, when it comes to the management and the farming and all that, it's people just take your info and run with it. And I don't know. We've kind of cut back. So, you know, everybody sees everything in the summer, but yeah, I worry about being perceived as a kill. 'Cause that's really not me. I know it could come out as that when you're on YouTube or TV show or whatever it may be, but I'm trying to, I'd like to get away from any association of that, you know, but you know, that's just kind of the way it goes. When you stick your head up, stick your neck out for something.
Sure. And, you know, Case and I, with both, you know, managing, you know, ground we have too, there's just a different level. I believe there's a different level of appreciation of, you know, all the strategy and the effort and everything that happens in the summertime, spring, fall, whatever it is. And then when you see those ducks or those geese accumulate and use, you know, your property like you dream about, the satisfaction level is just next level.
Yes, and that's what we got to find a way to take our satisfaction level and make it cool to shoot less or cool to enjoy other parts of it in the public, you know, land scene or just in the general public. Because I don't know, you know, it's such a tough deal, because you know that us three and just everybody that manages it, we are super lucky, but. And we do, you know, they don't get to experience it, but that's what we got to try to figure out, is how to take our feeling and our appreciation for it and why we appreciate it and get it, you know, and make the younger crowd or like I'm young, but just everybody in general, you know, realize how much we appreciate getting to do what we do and see what we see. So it's, man, I don't know how to do it. I haven't figured that part out yet, but. Here we are.
It's tough. You know, it's tough to sway or commit somebody to come over to the investor side of things when they haven't ever seen it. I mean, I was on a dibble bar this morning planting trees, you know, and stopped doing that to come do this. And, you know, it, anytime you're out there, you guys know this, if you're planting trees, it's not necessarily for your benefit. I'll be an old man before those really come to fruition, but it's something that my children and their children will see the benefit of. And you mentioned it when you talked about how open the Delta is up there. And, you know, you look at all the many millions of acres are cleared down to the Mississippi Alluvial Valley. You know, it's going to take investors, people that are willing to work to restore that, rebuild that, and hold on to the habitat that we do have. So I don't know. I don't think you can have these conversations too much. I don't think you can talk about it too much. We need more people that are willing to give back more than they take away from this resource.
Yeah. And it's tough, man. Just we need to dig up a bunch of pits to start, would help. But you know, that, what do you do? There's always somebody there renting them, and you know, we're getting pretty good at farming.
What is the pressure like in the Boot Hill?
Oh man, there, you know, if you go north of Big Lake along the floodways, like Little River Drainage District deal, if you were to go north from there, so mostly on the east side, west side of the floodways is going to be your lighter dirt after, you know, the further north you get, that's how it gets. But, you know, you get 2 or 3 miles, 4 miles, to the east, west of the floodways, it turns into pretty good dirt, but right along those floodways and then east from, you know, the flood, if anybody that's listening, just pull up Google Earth, you'll see it. Go to the Boot Hill and runs east to Kennett. North to between Morehouse, between Sykeston and Dexter, you can't. It's a bunch of ditches. But anyhow, that's what drained the swamp. And from there to Highway 55 to the Mississippi River, it's pretty strong. From, you know, north of Big Lake, for instance, I'd say for 15 miles north of Big Lake, 10 miles, there's nearly a pit. There's a pit in every 40 and 80 for 5 or 6 miles. 10 miles north of Big Lake. And then it's for sure every 320, you know, after that for a long, long ways. And it kind of clears out when you get further north, but you're just kind of getting further away from the ducks. They kind of got to traffic more through there. And, you know, Mr. Lawrence owns a bunch through there, and that kind of slowed that process down. Once you get north, but it's pretty rough. Where there's not cotton, there's duck pits usually. So, it's kind of crazy. Yeah. A lot of $6,000 deals going on that are killing 50 ducks, you know, and
yeah. Well, let me ask you this. So are y'all hunting, like, are these flight ducks typically, just because of your proximity?
No, now where we're at, there's not a lot of pressure. We're kind of further. We're in a little pocket here, but there is right here around the lodge, but at Eagle's Nest, it's kind of off by itself. It's inside the levee. So it's kind of rough, if that makes sense. So it's down in the bottom, and there's not a lot of pressure around it, but we're just hunting the willows. WRP put in 94. So, big willow trees and wetland units. So buck brush and stuff like that. And there's not a lot of pressure down there. So we kind of hold those ducks. We got 100-acre refuge that usually holds quite a few ducks. This year was different. They kind of got zoned in, you know, White Lake and Tennessee area, and we didn't hold nearly as many after about the November 15th, 20th. No, I take that back. Youth season. So yeah, the 20th, we had them pretty strong. Even mallards, we had, you know, we probably had 30,000 or 40,000 ducks, you know, 20,000 mallards up and through that Thanksgiving range, and then it seemed like they all went back north to St. Charles. I'm almost 90%. That's what happened. We kept a lot of our teal. And then once, you know, we go on a split, the Sunday after Thanksgiving and run through December 7th every year. And when December 7th come around during, you know, mind you, I don't drive around, much. Like, our stuff was pretty much setting, like everything was done. So we're talking about a really good piece of property that just sat there for 10 days And I mean, yeah, I checked some wells, but no driving a boat. Like we went to the blind one time, every blind one time before the actual opener. And I think it was 3 days prior to, and that was the only disturbance. And a lot of our ducks left. So we kept the till for a while. They were, you know, it was insanity for 3 or 4 days, and there were some mallards, don't get me wrong, but there wasn't 30 or 40,000 like there was. And that's under no hunt pressure. So I'm pretty sure they went back north just because it was pretty warm, you know, right there in that time period. But, you know, we got that little cold front right at the beginning of the rut, first week of November. And it was, man, it was shaping up to be really special. As a matter of fact, I was worried. I didn't quit pumping, but I checked up a few things and slowed down on some pumping. I didn't run some humpbacks, you know, and you can gain really fast with those. And I waited, but, man, there was just so much food that I was just nervous that they were just going to get all of it. And man, so, but by the seventh there, we were pretty much full pool. Man, the duck, that's not usually how that happens. So it was a little bit spooky, you know, but the till numbers kind of matched our season, kind of matched, the teal. I mean, I'm watching 200. They're migrating out of the south today, and I just watched two bunches of 150 since we've been doing it. Pitch into a little wetland unit right here by the lodge, but our mallards, like after those early flock of mallards, whether they went south or north, whatever, Cohen could probably tell us more. I think he had some ducks go north for the first time ever in November and December, if I'm right, in 3 years or something crazy. But yeah, and then after that, it was just kind of, we had a few ducks. But we had a great season, but we had to work. Does that make sense? Like, we hunt till 1 o'clock and then we stop. So there was a lot of, you know, getting your limit at 11:30 or noon or 10. There wasn't that 10-day period or, you know, when everybody's done and back at the lodge at 8:30 or 9:30. You know, usually we have a couple of those, probably three, you know, where it's pretty good. And it was just a long season. So I don't know if that helps any. I'm rattling. I'm going to need to give it back to you, but you know, that just in a nutshell, that's kind of how our season went. Cause I know that's where we're going to go, but the till were dramatic. The till numbers were insane. It was crazy. It was just truly awesome. It was special to me just cause it was so good with the till. Like, man, it was incredible. And
yeah, but, we had tons of them all the way through, which is usually not the case. No. And I know Kaysen did as well. They just showed out for sure. And helped a lot, you know, filling, you know,
getting out of the field.
On those days, but I mean, it provided some really good six duck limit hunts that, you know, those are not super frequent.
Dude, I know a lot of them, and man, I don't care what anybody says. Like, if you shoot a 6-8 man limit or however man minute limit a teal you shoot, and they're finishing like they should, it is a great experience and it is a ton of fun. Like, a ton of fun. But man, we were putting hurting on them. Man, we killed a bunch of them. Like, everybody did, you know? So that's what I thought back to. Like, me and Brandon had that conversation, like, man. Think about, we're not the only one shooting teal like this. Like, I'm not Superman. We're not Superman. You know what I'm saying? Like, goodness gracious, we killed a bunch of them. So, meaning you guys too, you know?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that may not agree about how much fun they are to shoot. And I don't know if that's because they don't have the opportunity or they've never had it work out that well, but
maybe they can't shoot.
They are. They're one of my favorite birds to shoot when they're doing it like that. It's a lot of quail.
Oh my gosh. Like, not shooting them. Like, if you can just get them when their feet are dragging the water, you know, on the windy days when it's blowing and you can get everybody to shoot their first shot when their feet are dragging the water, it just gets you out of the field so much quicker and win them teal and just having the patience. And the main thing is, as I've learned, is people don't like them is because they're not very patient with the teal. Like, man, they might fly around three times before they get good enough to really be efficient. And I think there's a big gap in our hunting world today about, like, I'm not shooting into teal going with the wind, no matter how close they are. We aren't doing it. I'm not. Now, some of the guides probably do, but I just think that's something maybe that we can relay to the youth. Like, hey guys, let's, if ducks are 20 yards and they're flying with the wind, the chance of them lighting are very high. And maybe if they can, we can teach them to kill more ducks quicker. We can get them out of the field, you know, just little things like that. But heck, we had so many till I was learning to call at them. Like I was real over the past 3 years. I mean, you just learn, like, if everybody's quiet and they go down to the end and fly through the hole and you go, man, I mean, they will turn and come back and land in the decoys. It's kind of crazy, but they're still a huntable duck. That's fun, man. I love them. And I agree. Nobody thinks that for some reason, a lot of people look down on it, but man, I don't. I'm all about it.
For over 30 years, Lyle Real Estate has been connecting land investors and outdoorsmen with sellers. Whether looking to invest in an income-producing farm or recreational land, the Lyle Real Estate team has the connections and the expertise to help. They work with tracts of all sizes and specialize in agricultural, timberland, and recreational properties. New listings are hitting the market almost weekly, so head on over to their website to learn more. www.lylerealestate.com.
Yeti. From the legendary hard coolers to the new barware series, Yeti has you covered. Or check out one of my favorite new products from them, the Loadout Series Go Box. Yeti, built for the wild.
Well, you reached out to me a little while ago, maybe last spring, talking about WRE and some of the issues or differences, you know, on state level of that. But maybe stay away from some of those conversations, but talk a little bit about just that restoration, the moist soil units, and what that does for habitat. Because you guys do a great job habitat-wise, and I think that's why you see the success that you do in the field.
I agree. I really do. We're not a spray it and have open water kind of folks. A lot of people try to do that with their WRE, and yeah, I'm going to stay out of the rules and regs. That's for I'll have to have pen and paper for that. We'll have to sit down and have a grown-up conversation. But when it comes to your moist soil, like, we have a bunch. There's 800 acres right here by the lodge, and there's, you know, 600 at Eagle's Nest, and there's some big chunks. And, you know, actually there's 1,200 here by the lodge. So, you know, we're dealing with, it, you know, 16, 18, 2,000 acres of wetlands. And, man, right now is when you see just awesome stuff as a land manager, you know, because they're in the bugs and they're in the snails and all that stuff. And they really key on it now in late January, or if you have a normal January where you don't have a, you know, an Arctic blast January 15th, like that's not that, you know, normally for us, that's not where we're at. We're used to having 60 degree weather from the 10th, 15th of January to the end. I think you guys are too, or at least a few days. Like, I like it to get in the 60s and then, you know, start get down in the high 40s from January and blow out of the south. I wish it was a south wind and 50 degrees as a high and an occasional 60 degree high from January 15th through the end, or January 10th through the end. And that's when your ducks really get centered on this moist soil, I think. And early, you know, that October, it really helps with taking your, you know, when they're not eating really hard, it seems that if you can keep them on some moist soil and keep them from just living in your food, you know, your rice or your hot crop or whatever it may be, if you can just keep them in the moist soil content, they can get a little millet, they can get some bugs, they can get a little bit of whatever it may be. It just seems to really give those ducks a place to just stay out of your stuff that you're counting on when it's cold. And not that the moist soil it's not a save all, guys. That's not what it is, but it can be pretty inexpensive if you know what you're doing and you don't let it get away from you. That is truth. Like, you know, if you got a 300 acre farm, you don't need 300 acres of corn. And that's causing us a lot of problems. That people think that rice or corn or really those two, or just all moist soil is the answer. And that just can't be true. You know, I had a guy, one of my best friends still today, that taught me a long time ago, probably, heck, man, 10, 15 years ago. He's like, how long do you want ducks living on your farm? I'm like, I don't know, I guess through November through January 31st, or, you know, it's cool to have them in February. You know, as a farmer, you love looking at them, or I do, and taking the kids, or that's when I don't care if the public's stopping on the gravel road after season. So yeah, I love one to be around. And he's like, you want them living there as many days as you can. I want them living on my farm in July, you know, and that I really try to transfer that into, that's what management is trying to give a duck a spot to be the whole year, you know? And I know that's not really the case here. You get what I'm saying, but man, I love seeing 150 mallards with babies in a rice filled ditch, you know, in a zero grade wide tail ditch or something, you know, where the rice got drained out, or a cut spot where the rice didn't come up and there's 75 mallards or whatever it may be living at. You know what I'm talking about? Just living out the center of the field. I love seeing that. And that's kind of what I try to do with the moist soil. That's the biggest thing I've taken away from it is it fills in those gaps, and you can allow it to fill in those gaps because your bugs get started early, you flood. So I start pumping, you know, in August. And if a moist soil unit's fixing to get done, and I know the, not necessarily the smart weed, but you know, you've got a 5.5-6 foot tall standard barnyard grass. So you put 100 pounds of urea on and it looks awesome. And you sprayed it once and killed the suspenia, and you know, you probably killed some of your smart weed, but you just can't have a full all suspenia stand. I'm letting a little more go than I used to. I used to be anal and try to do it like a farmer, but I'm letting some strips of suspenia go, 10 foot strips here and there that I'll go wide with a sprayer or whatever it may be. But it's going to dry, you know, if that drawdown happened in, you know, April, it's going to be dropping its seed in September. So why not give the ducks a little bit, even if it's some blue wing teal or some gadwall or widgeon or pintails, you know, like what's wrong with having 5,000 pintails sitting in some moist soil, you know, in September. And that's kind of my goal, is I've learned if you can get them early and kind of take care of whatever ducks happen to call your property home, it seems to work really well. And then just don't shoot at them too much, which is the hardest part. But yeah, the moist soil is simple. If you just take your time, and I will say this, don't drain more than you can take care of at a time. You know, if that makes sense, you've got till June. Mm-hmm. Like, don't think that, oh man, we want to get all this work done. Pick some units you want to do some work in, and you know, or you know, half the farm, and I don't know. It's not a cure all, but I can tell you what's not, damn sure not a cure all, is 400 acres of rice or 400 acres of corn. You know, especially now, there's exceptions, don't get me wrong, there's some blocks of timber in Arkansas that they can provide a whole lot of that moist soil. They can provide a whole lot of that moist soil habitat in their woods if they're not hunting them a bunch. You know, I'm talking about big blocks of woods. I'm talking about 1,000 acres that two people's hunting, or like Jeff's, where there's two parties going on 5,300, you know, big blocks of food and trying to feed the state's ducks necessarily, or just trying to house a bunch of ducks is really good for them. But if you're in a willow filled ag situation, kind of like we are, damn sure corn and rice everywhere is not the answer. And if you're just, in my opinion, you know, and you look at Jeff's, I mean, it's just a big area. And there's so much moist soil, it's insane. You know, like everybody think, oh, well, farmer's planting 1,000 acres of rice. No, he's not. I mean, yeah, he is 800, whatever, but that's not all. Like they have everything they need. They got a little bit of Milo in the deep water. They got, he's not, you know, I'm just not a big corn fan, you know, 80 acres of corn and just a blend of everything. But the most is timber and wetlands and, or moist soil. But I will say this, if you're not going to take care of your moist soil, you don't need to have it. You probably, everybody ought to hire somebody to either do it for them or give weekly advice once busy seem to, you know, and I don't know, go to their farm, have somebody that you could pay to go there monthly. Because the mistakes can really sneak up on you if it gets wet or you get a couple 2-inch rains in a moist soil unit. Like, you know, Case and you guys both know, like, man, it can really get after you if you're not paying attention in that June, July time period. So
yeah, no doubt. It's not as simple as some would think. And you brought up some stuff that was interesting that Brett and I just kind of covered on our previous episode. you know, we talk about flooding early, and that's one of the reasons that Brent and I would like to see our early, you know, longer split kind of go away, so that you've got more of this early water, you've got more invertebrates later in the year. We're going to hopefully overcome some of the deficits we have in duck energy days. So it's good to hear you say those things.
We kind of probably need to, I wouldn't be, you know, I used to be later, and man, guys, I'm here to tell you, if the Boot Hill, if the South Zone of Missouri and all of Arkansas started November 15th or 10th, and we shut off 15th or 20th, even a week sooner than we do now, or, I mean, shit, man, we're not hunting till December 7th. And I'm trying to hold the whole state's ducks because everybody's saving food. It was just a bad decision. Like, and, mm-hmm. you know, and even me, like, I love feeding them, but I've got 16 guys every day that are counting on me to put ducks in front of them. Like, and when I've got to try to figure out from, okay, youth season's the 20th, we open Thanksgiving Day, like, I've got to figure out how to make enough. Because, I mean, it's so bad that we don't take clients Thanksgiving because I'm so scared about not having enough water. So we just do friends and family, mostly family, you know, and those first 4 days, just because you don't want to have it all flooded. You know, we do have some traffic spots and I might try to make sure they're flooded. You know, I've got one permanent spread that is fine. And just because the ducks don't sit in this little willow hole at all or anywhere near it. But that's hard on a manager. And there's usually a ton of ducks here and good fresh ducks that are, you can be efficient with and get in and get out from November 1st. You know what I'm talking about? The last full moon, you know, from the last full moon in October or whenever that full moon hits right in there through the next full moon is a strong amount of ducks. And we seem to be, we could use that rest later in the year.
We just had the almost the identical conversation that the value of those days at the end to a duck are exponentially greater than the split, you know, a big long, like here, like Arkansas, last year we had a 10 day December split. So prime time and we're not hunting. For and this is clear. I mean, to be clear, this is advantageous to the private land duck hunter because public land struggles to have water at that point, especially under the current plan, given the restoration they're trying to do of the public green tree reservoirs. But it's prime time.
They're not gonna have the water there anyways.
Well, in most times, no, not great, but The ability to stop hunting until the very end of January is I believe, and I think Kaysen believes this too, is one of the components to get this ship turned back around a little bit.
Man, I didn't have a hen problem all year. Not one day did I look at the stringers and be like, oh God, oh, we're in a bind. Sorry, I had to jump out of my truck and use the restroom. Audio was bad, guys, but boy, there was a whole lot of drakes on stringers, and that's just really odd. Like, man, you two, especially early, like those November hunts, you'd be like, all right, guys, we got 10 hens. Holy cow. We that's enough. Like I mean, I'll scold my client, not scold them, but I'll talk to him like grown men. Hey guys, no more hens. Let's tighten up here. We're clearly going to get our limit. Can you guys please just, we got six hens and there's six of us. Like, we're, you know, you can't say that late in the day, but you know, or eight hint, like you're just like, holy cow, we got a lot of brown on there. And I start thinking about it and they want to think about it. The clients are, you know, hey guys, if group of five comes in and there's three drakes, let's make sure we shoot the drakes. Like, and I try not to shoot any single or pairs of hens. It's gotta be slow. Especially if there's any chance of a duck around and, I don't know. I just, that scares me. And I think if we could quit that January shit, I don't know. It would probably help a little bit with that. I would think. I don't know for sure. I'm not a biologist, but there was not very many hens this year, like not very many at all. And they started chasing crazy early. They started chasing like December 15th, 12th, like 10th, like early chasing. Like that's crazy. I don't know why, but like that's January 10th stuff. Like, and it was a for sure 3 weeks earlier than I've ever seen it. And there's got to be a biologist that can answer that question. And that's, you know, that's where I tend to get nervous about the people that are making these decisions. That's why I'm so passionate on the WRP regulations, because the people that are spending the most time are out there. Science is science, but like, man, well, there is no way that I'm the only one that noticed that chasing deal and how much the ducks breeding flights or whatever the scientific term is. We call it chasing and
courtship flight,
you know? Yeah. Courtship flight. And I'm going to be honest with you. The first time I ever seen it. So I grew up when I, you know, hunting the middle zone of Missouri. So we would go out the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, and it's only 15 miles or 25 miles from the lodge now that's in the south zone, but it's right here in the Boot Hill. Half the Boot Hill's in the middle zone and half of it's in the south zone, which is bizarre. Like if you get time, look up the Missouri state zone boundaries. But anyways, I'd never seen that. And I paid to go with Ronnie Capps probably 12, 15 years ago as a young man, you know, just a trip with 10 or 12 of us. And that's an awesome experience. You guys should go do it before he retires, even if you don't kill any. But that was the first time, I'll never forget it. That's the first time I'd seen mallards really chasing like that, you know, because I wasn't hunting. I wasn't paying attention to stuff like that. I'm sure I'd seen it in a rice field watching them, but you get what I mean? Like my season was usually over before then. And I've really started paying attention to little things like that. And this year there was lots of very odd things that kind of scare me. So,
yeah, we definitely noticed the courtship flights occurring sooner. Now, I mean, logic would tell you, and based on, you know, just eyeball tests, this duck hunter eyeball stuff.
Correct.
You know, you didn't, the same as you, did not see hens in the volume of, you know, been experiencing. So then it makes you wonder. And then you kind of start, if you start kind of watching on, you know, guys that film a lot of video.
Take big
pictures of big raft of ducks. You're like, oh, that counts out of whack. Or you got buddies that got trail cams and you show
right
trail cam pics and you're like, man, that ratio's out of whack. And then you get to banding season, which is always going to be skewed heavily. You're going to get way more drakes.
They're off by themselves.
Yeah, you're going to get way more drakes in the pens. But it's like, I mean, Jeff Watts said the other day he was having like 11 or 12 to 1 ratio in his traps.
I'm telling you what, if you skillet shot and you were a poacher and you skillet shot or punt gun that video of Grant Sinclair's,
yeah,
it would
right
freak a biologist plumb out.
Yeah.
Like it, there is no telling what, I mean, there was 80% mallard drakes and I don't know, you know, just little stuff like that you notice, like just crazy stuff. You
yeah
know? Like, And if you, maybe if we put it to the public like that, hey guys, if you shot into them on the water, it would, you wouldn't have to try to aim for like, you know, I'm just saying, like if you were snow goose jumping them, there would be 100 drakes and 18 hens. Like it was crazy. And I noticed that right off the bat, like just odd.
Yeah. Yeah. We did the same. And it just, you start talking to different people in different parts of the country. I mean, you're in the Boot Hill. Jeff Watts on the west side of Missouri. We're in Arkansas. Right. Kaysen's, you know, an hour and a half from me, and we're all seeing, you know, similar stuff. It's like, all right, do we still need two in the limit? Two hens in the limit? Do we need to look at that? And it's just a lot of stuff.
Well, that's crazy. It's even allowed now. Like, it don't make any sense. Like, what do you mean? Do we need to? Like, how in the hell? Nobody's gonna care.
No, nobody.
The general right public isn't gonna be outraged about that. They want drakes on their straps anyways to beat their chest. So that's crazy. That is just completely out of line. And I was raised different. Like Ira McCauley's a great friend of mine, and I tell this story and I statute of limitations. But man, when I was young guy, now I was taught to shoot the hens because 90% of the people are going to shoot drakes, you know, because, oh, it don't matter how many hens you kill. Like, we're trying to get out of here as fast as possible. Does that make sense? Like, when they did all that studies, like, oh, the hens don't matter. We can't kill enough hens to make a difference in the population. So I was like, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. We're shooting whatever comes in the hole first, no matter what, because we got to get out of here. At a very young age, I was taught that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, graduating high school, like, I didn't know much before that, but, like, you knew that you were just to shoot every duck. That was the rule. Like, I helped Kip Smith, a gentleman at Dudley, and he just said, you get out of there and you shoot whatever comes in the fastest and don't shoot into any great big giant bunches of nothing. And you know, other than teal and just, you know, like, that's when the mojo works. So, I mean, shooting into a flock of 30 mallards in a rice field was pretty common. And now whether they were all finishing was one thing, because that's about when you'd get five or four juvies or year old ducks to come light and you'd be ripping into the rest of the bunch at 40, you know? So, but anyhow, and I don't know. The hen deal is crazy. Like, I don't know why one just because, like, you're going to make a mistake, you know? And I think that's plenty. I don't think anybody would have a problem with that. And I don't know why that's not a national regulated. Well, I guess because we can shoot 12 hens in Canada or whatever it is, you know, so.
True.
You know, so that's what other people are going to say. What about Canada? And here we go. Like, it's
don't go. If you're upset about harvest in Canada, don't go.
I'm not gonna. I haven't went yet, so I'm trying. I wouldn't talk to you.
I just, and you know, in general, people talk about, you know, the harvest in Canada, and it's U.S. citizens.
I'm talking about guides that make their living doing this, telling me we're killing too many. That would love to come on this podcast, that make a living, that are successful, well, have a great reputation, just like we do, about business or how you run an operation, or like solid dudes that are like, we got to do something about the mojo and shooting all these ducks in Canada. It's crazy, guys. They're like, we're killing thousands of these things, thousands, if not millions. I think the number is so skewed, they're off by 6-digit minimum, like in just Canada, in each state in Canada, not the whole. I'm talking about each province or whatever the province is a 6-digit number on every one of them. And I'm probably wrong. It's probably more than that.
Before we go down this road, and I do want to clarify a little bit for those that are listening and don't understand or don't have all the info. When we're talking about these ratios, these sex ratios, one of the reasons I think that it's as out of whack or staggering as it is, we noticed early on with these transmitter birds that the hen mortality was significantly higher, maybe 3 times higher than what AHM is factoring for. So what's happening is, as habitat and everything is decreasing on the nesting ground, these hens are just getting hammered. So when they make it back down here the next fall,
gosh,
they're not there. They don't exist.
And they're just, so, yeah. Man, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And we're banding less of them, right? And and less of them are getting transmitter in bands.
Well, significantly on the banding, I mean, we've dropped since COVID, most of the big banding stations in the U.S. we don't band the birds anymore. But we're dumping all these money into arbitrary surveys. We could dump them into banding data and get real.
Don't real ban data, the drakes. You know, ban 1 year, 2 years. It would take 2 years. You just ban 50% more hens than you do drakes. Let them go. Or what? I don't know if it's a money deal. Like, it's probably the money and the cost of the labor getting it done than it is the actually banding and the input of the computer system. But just 1 year, abandon more hens, you know, and goodness gracious, it would make we need to find out some real numbers on all this stuff. And that's the main thing. Just craziness.
As you could tell, our man Eric got going pretty good on this episode. So we're going to take a pause at this juncture and kick this to a part two. I think that'll help everybody enjoy the podcast with Eric Reinhart as he gets into spinning wing decoys, shooting mallard hens, and a whole lot of other topics in the second part. So check us out, and we'll see you on that one.
Light boots, the lightest pair of knee boots you're ever going to find. Weighing in at just 13 ounces each. Putting on a pair of light boots is truly a jaw-dropping experience.